Good morning, everyone. Let's try that again. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Perfect.
Hello. My name is Tsuyoshi Ushio from Japan, you know, and I'm senior technical evangelist in Japan of the DevOps. I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions to him. Donovan, could you introduce yourself, please?
Sure. My name is Donovan Brown. I'm a senior program manager here on the VSO team responsible for DevOps. Exactly. So the experience that you have in VSO and on Team Foundation Server when it comes to DevOps is my responsibility.
Cool. Oh, yeah. You are the perfect person.
Perfect. Good. Yeah. Well, hopefully I can answer all your questions. If I can't, I will definitely track down the answers for you and get them to you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Great.
Yeah. These days, I read some article about the transition of the Microsoft into the DevOps,
correct,
especially VSO team.
Yes.
So I'm going to ask you about such like transition things and the technology, background technology,
okay,
and the process or something, right?
Sounds good.
Okay. And first of all, and what did you get from the transition?
It's interesting because before I joined Microsoft, I was a process consultant. Mm-hmm. So I flew all over
really?
The world. Yeah, and I
me as well.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
so you
I was
installed
the
Foundation Server, and you help customers use it, and you implement their build systems for them. And what we realized is that a lot of our customers, tools just aren't enough. You have to understand the process. You have to understand Scrum. You have to understand how those meetings work. And what we would do as consultants is we would stay on staff for them for months, helping them figure out how to become more agile, how to become more productive. And back then, what was missing is we didn't have the entire answer, right? 2005, 2018 Foundation Server. Yeah, we didn't. Our build system was okay. And we had no release answer whatsoever. And now with 2015, we have everything. We have everything
cool.
that you need. Exactly. So it's really nice. And while we were helping customers go through that transition, Microsoft is going through that exact same transition. Because remember, we had TFS 2005. We didn't get another TFS until 2008, right? And then we didn't get another TFS until 2012.
Okay.
And then, or 10 and then 12. So there was a huge gap in between each release. And what Microsoft was doing internally before I joined was exactly what I was teaching our customers to do, which was to release more often.
Okay.
So now VSO is delivered every 3 weeks.
Every 3 weeks?
Yeah, every 3 weeks you get. It's amazing,
fast.
Right?
Yeah,
every 3
amazing.
Weeks, you have a brand new set of features being delivered to VSO.
Oh.
And then what we do is we package those up, and every 3 months, we deliver those same value to you on-prem in the on-prem product.
Oh.
Right. So we actually have run at two different cadences. We run at a 3-week cadence for VSO and a 3-month cadence for TFS.
Cool.
And it's amazing, And it requires a lot of the technology that we now have in VSO and in TFS to enable that type of transition, not only for our customers, but for us as well. I think it was at we have an internal conference here at Microsoft called Tech Ready. And at Tech Ready 19, Satya said, we have to stop living this fake life where we would deliver products for others that we wouldn't use ourselves. And it was a really powerful statement for me because he was basically saying, we're using TFS internally. And if you're not using it now, you're going to start using it. And we have the Windows team and we have the Office team using TFS.
Oh, really?
Yes, because when we use TFS and we use
VSO,
we become better at it as well,
okay,
right? So, and I think it shows in our product and it shows in our innovation that because we're using it ourselves, we're our own worst critics when it comes to this needs to be better, this needs to be better.
Cool.
And I think it's
very
fantastic,
cool.
too.
Yeah. And in addition, I'd like to know about how many members do you have as a VSO team?
Oh, the VSO team is actually quite large. I am actually just one member. I report through the chain that goes up through through Brian Harry. Buck Hodges, I think he has, I want to say it's over 100 people on his team already. Yeah,
100?
And Brian Harry's org, I think, is 700. I think those are the numbers that I feel for name dropping. I had dinner with Buck Hodges not too long ago when he was here in Houston, and those are the numbers I remember him saying. Right, there's a huge organization.
Oh, huge! Yeah.
Because you got to remember VSO and TFS and all that stuff all rolls up into under him.
Oh, and what kind of team do you have? Yeah.
I'm actually a PM, right? So it's interesting. Most PMs at Microsoft have an engineering counterpart. So the PM is driving the idea. The engineering counterpart has the resources that are actually going to go out and create the actual software that we need. I'm in a unique position because I do not have an engineering counterpart. What I do instead is I work with the PMs for build and the PM for release and the PM for test.
Oh.
And I try to take that triad of products and make sure that they flow effortlessly between the two of them. And that DevOps experience that we need from a tooling perspective is the best that it can be. So I have to go and convince those other PMs that, hey, this is a good idea. You really want to make sure this happens. And this is what I'm hearing from the customers on what they need. Let's go make sure that all of our products talk to each other really well.
Yeah. But why I was wondering such a thing is because the VSO is very complex and heterogeneous technology, right? Not only the Microsoft stuff, but also the Ubuntu and sometimes Docker stuff and Chat stuff.
Absolutely.
It is very good.
Yes.
So I wonder why, how to manage such like difficult technologies.
Right. Yeah. And I think this is something that's really important, is that it's a new age for Microsoft. Mm-hmm. I've said this a lot, if you've ever seen me speak before. And I always joke that the first time I installed Linux was after I joined Microsoft. It's just new for us, right? It's a Microsoft that embraces Linux. It's a Microsoft that understands that you're going to be using other build systems and other work item tracking systems. And we need to make sure that those tools that you already use today will integrate with ours. But Team Foundation Server, it's interesting, when I go and do executive briefings, I very rarely ask what software you write.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why is because I don't care. I don't care if it's rich or not. I don't care if it's web-based. I don't care if it's Java or Node.js or Python or PHP. I don't care. Because if your goal is to take an idea and turn it into a piece of software, then we can help. We can help regardless of the language. We can help regardless of the platform. We can help regardless of what technology that you use. We can actually enable you to do that more efficiently. So you can tell me if you want, but guess what? My answer is the same regardless if it's .NET or Java, PHP, or Node.js. We can help you because our tools think that all code is created equal, right? We want to version it. Great. We have a version control system. We have centralized and a distributed. So if you want to use Git, great. If you want to use TFVC, we have that for you as well. You need to take that idea and you need a place where you can store it so that you can store your requirements, right? And TFS and VSO give you work item tracking. We allow you to take that idea and break it down into tasks. We allow you to log bugs against it. We allow you to test it and have test results against it and test cases against it. We then let you take that idea and give it to your developer so that they can start writing code. And they can write code on any platform. We have Visual Studio Code now, right, that lets you write on a Mac, lets you write on a Linux machine or on a Windows machine. We still have Visual Studio, which is I think is the best IDE in the world. You can stay in Eclipse if you want to. We have plugins coming out for IntelliJ so that you stay where you
IntelliJ
are. Used to be Microsoft would say, come to us and we'll give you all this cool stuff. And now Microsoft is saying, stay where you are. We're coming to you.
Cool.
And we're going to give you all the same value that we've been giving everyone else for so long. So I it's really interesting. I was at a customer visit not too long ago. And I was in this auditorium, and I said, so everyone in here is a .NET developer? And they nodded their head yes. I was like, okay, does this company have any Java developers in it? And they all nodded yes. And I said, well, why aren't they here? Why aren't your Java developers going to listen to what I'm saying right now? Because our build system runs on Linux, and it runs on Macs, and it builds Java applications as well as it builds .NET. So why are your Java people not here listening to me? So I challenge my customers now to say, no, this is not a Microsoft .NET conversation. This is Microsoft and Company X conversation, and we can help you in any language that you want. So it's really important to drive that point home.
Cool, cool, very cool.
Great.
Yeah, yeah, that is exactly what I love. VSO. Yeah.
Exactly. I've been doing Java demos as well. Exactly. And I've been doing Java demos going through Team Foundation Server in VSO. It'll work perfectly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I wonder, and the member is so huge, right? Over the 100, and handling a lot of the technology, right? So I think the other team, it is very difficult to handle such a situation, right? Because in terms of the agile, team could be less than the 25 or the 10 or
Sure.
How to manage such like a complex
What
team?
Ends up happening is that you obviously start using technologies like Skype, because everyone's usually not physically located to each other. Instead of having sprint reviews where everyone comes together, a lot of us send out what we call sprint videos. So since we're all in different time zones, right? It's really difficult to have someone who's in India, who's 8 hours off of us time zone, to be up when we're having our stand-ups or when we're having our retrospectives and our sprint reviews. So what we do is we record those, and then we ship those across so that they can experience that same exact review that we had before.
Oh, not only the lot of people, but also the wider
geographically. Absolutely. So it's I mean, I wish it was just 700 people in one area, but it's not. It's 700 people that, with some of us in Redmond, some of us in Raleigh, some of us in India, some of us all over the world, that are all working together to make this happen. So release management is from the IDC, right? Which is which isn't here in the United States. So it's amazing to see all those things come together, and you just find ways to work through those challenges. I mean, sometimes I'm up really early in the morning because I really need to be in a meeting, or they'll stay up really late at night to be in that meeting. But as a team, you just make it work.
Oh, cool, cool, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, the secret is chatting.
Absolutely. I'm online all the time. We use videos quite a bit. I've been in so many Skype meetings with literally people from all over the world, mm-hmm. all trying to solve a particular problem. And what you do is you basically make sure that your repository is set up right, that everyone can contribute, mm-hmm. and that we can build safely.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Very
interesting. And in addition, I'd like to ask you about the architecture of the system. Because, the 100 team is very huge resource, right? So these days, and a lot of people mention about microservices, right?
Mm-hmm.
VSO is a monolithic or microservices?
There's lots of small parts of it, right? It mm-hmm. all gets built together as a unit, mm-hmm. but we're able to add things to it because of the way that they're semi-separated, right? They all have mm-hmm. REST APIs that allow us to be able to interact with each other. That's the same way that our external vendors interact with us as well, right? So it allows us to be to develop a little bit mm-hmm. isolated and separated, mm-hmm. but it all gets deployed as a unit, right? So there's still challenges there. When you have a big system that large, it's just difficult, regardless if they're microservices or not. Mm. Even being able to test your microservices with 19 others, you have to mm-hmm. have a pretty powerful machine where you could even try to duplicate something like that, right?
Yeah.
So it is segmented out to smaller areas. Like the build and the release features are very, very tightly coupled. They're very similar because mm-hmm. They use the same engine, they use the same backend, they use the same tasks, so there's a lot of communication there. Mm-hmm. The work item tracking has its own REST API that you can exploit as well. So we are using, I don't know if I would call them microservices, and mm-hmm. I don't want to misspeak there because I would mm-hmm. want one of the engineers to answer that for you more mm-hmm. more technically. But the systems are set up such that they can be interchangeable mm-hmm. and that we communicate through REST APIs.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think very similar to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very microservices.
Similar. Right. But I don't want to misspeak on that one. Again, I'm a PM and not an engineer mm-hmm. on the team, so I do code, but I don't code on this particular product. Okay. I'm more of an ideas and, mm-hmm. and visual and getting everything working out. So I just don't want to completely misspeak on that one.
Okay.
Okay.
So, and then, okay, just a moment.
Sure.
Okay, and maybe, and you transitioned into the DevOps environment, right? So, which means devs and ops must be collaborated together
sure.
and do the same sprint or something, right?
Sure.
Yeah?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And what is the challenge of such a collaboration?
Oh, my goodness. I think that's the biggest challenge that we have right now.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people are rushing to define DevOps. Mm-hmm. And before I took a stab at it, and I recently mm-hmm. published what I believe to be a clean definition of DevOps mm-hmm. is from my perspective. Before I defined DevOps, I sat back and said, why are we talking about DevOps now? Why do you want to come here and talk to me about DevOps today mm-hmm. and not 10 years ago? Right? Oh, why weren't we talking about it 10 years ago?
Yeah.
And I believe the reason that we weren't talking about it 10 years ago and we're talking about it today is because 10 years ago, what hurt really, really bad was our inability to even write good software.
Oh.
You're a software developer?
Yeah, I used to.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. So have you ever been on a project that was late? It missed the date?
We've
all been on that project,
right?
Exactly, right? It's almost like a joke for me to ask that. Have you ever been on a project that was over budget?
Yes.
Exactly. Spent more money than it was supposed to. Have you ever been on a project that when you claimed that you were done, still didn't do everything that you promised it was going to do?
Yeah.
We've all been on those. I've been on a project that did all of those things, right?
Yeah.
In addition to that, it was really buggy.
It happened.
Exactly. So when we finally gave it over to the engineering team mm-hmm. or the operations teams to install it, mm-hmm. it broke. And all of a sudden, what people's like, okay, that's it. Before developers can put anything on this mm-hmm. machine, I want code reviews done. I want people to sign off on it. I want you not to touch the machines. I want you to write up what you're supposed mm-hmm. to do, give it to the ops guy so that he can go do it because we don't trust you to touch the machine anymore. And this huge gap started to build between developers and operations.
Yeah.
So that's why we didn't care about DevOps 10 years ago because we mm-hmm. couldn't even write software 10 years
ago.
So now what did we do? We came up with Scrum, mm-hmm. came up with Agile, we came up with extreme programming, test-driven development. We came up with all these cool techniques and methods that allowed us to produce value very, very quickly.
Yeah.
Produce value and deliver value are different. Just because I'm producing it, but if I can't get it to our server where you can use it, I haven't delivered any value. And that's mm-hmm. what ended up happening. And now we're starting, I think Agile has basically shined a light on the fact that we really mm-hmm. have a huge problem and taking code that we've just produced and getting it onto a server where people can use it. And that's what DevOps is here to help us solve is, why do we have this mistrust? Well, we have it because it's buggy software, it's difficult to deploy, mm-hmm. it's chaotic, it's error prone. So how can we fix that? Automation mm-hmm. is a huge way of fixing that, right?
Yeah.
So we go through and we try to automate as much as we can so that humans aren't touching it.
Yeah.
Automation is great, but it's not everything, right? We need to orchestrate the movement. Yeah. And no matter how much you automate, at some point, you're probably going to want a human being to get involved and say, okay, we've automated up to this point. Let me look and make sure everything's okay before I say it's okay for you to repeat this process in my QA environment, my UAT environment, and hopefully, finally, my production environment. And that's what tools like release management are helping us with, is that they help that orchestration through that automation to make sure that we get what we want. So it's just DevOps is here to hopefully solve that problem for us, is the way that I look at it. So I wanted to first say, why are we talking about DevOps? And then after that, I came up with a definition that is, DevOps is the union of people, process, and products to enable continuous delivery of value to our end users, right? And I think that sums it up really nicely. And then it lets us go back in and have those three different conversations. One conversation is, we got to get the people on board. Because I can give you all the tools you want, but if your people don't believe, it doesn't matter, right? It just simply doesn't matter. And what those people are going to need to succeed is a process, something that they can follow that says, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to do it, and we're going to be successful. And then what we do here at Microsoft is we give you the best suite of tools we can to help you through that process. So to me, it's people, process, and product.
Yeah, it is very important three elements.
Perfect.
Okay, so I'd like to ask you about automation. Because you said automation is very important, right?
Absolutely.
So, and we are successfully make it shorten the release cycle, right? Now, in this case, maybe the quality assurance is very difficult, right?
It can be, but the way that we get around that is by automating not only the development and the process, but the testing as well, right? So I'm going to switch over here real
quick to
our release management product. So this product here is one of the key components that we need to be able to automate a huge pipeline. And some of the things that we're able to do in systems like this is automate not only the deployment, but also the testing. So what we're looking at here is just an overview of a couple of them that I have running. And I believe that this one actually has some work getting done in it. Perfect. So here what we're doing is we're simply deploying a web app. And then later on, I'm actually firing up a test that I can go back in and run automatically. So what we have is Selenium is a really popular testing framework, and I'm running Selenium test against my web app after it's been deployed. So you're absolutely right. Keeping quality high when we're moving so fast requires automation at every point, including the testing point.
It is not only the unit test, but over the unit test.
Absolutely.
What kind of testing this tool handle?
Oh, good question. So in our build system, which is here, so in our build system, we can actually run test as well, and we would run your unit test, be it MB unit, X unit, MS test, whatever type of unit test you want. Even your Jasmine test for your JavaScript, we can run those in your build. Now, what's interesting about unit tests is they don't require anything to be deployed. Right? Unit tests should be able to be run in isolation and quickly pass or fail, letting me know I have good quality. Once the unit tests are done, we then pass the output over into our release system. We're going to then deploy the code that we've tested with unit test into an environment, and then we can run UI test, be it Selenium or coded UI. We can run web test. We can run load test. We can run pretty much anything that can be queued up from a command line. We can run that testing framework for you directly from our build system and our release system as well. So I encourage people to run as much testing automated as they can. But that's no matter how hard you try, you're never going to automate everything, right? You can try as hard as you want. So what we can do is in our QA environment, we can actually assign something called an approver and say Donovan Brown owns this environment, and he owns all the code that enters it. So before any code enters this environment, it'll email me and say, Donovan, we would like to add code to your environment.
Approval.
Exactly. And I either give my approval or not. And when I give my approval, it'll happily go in and overwrite my environment, run all my tests for me, and then I can go in and I can run a whole battery of functional tests that are manual. And then I can give another approval saying, all my tests passed, I'd like this to go on to the next environment, which could be production.
Very interesting. As a VSOT, what kind of tests do you do?
I actually don't know the answer to that. That's a really good question, but I honestly don't know I haven't looked at our actual release pipeline. I know that we do use release management.
Yeah, because you have separate.
But I have not seen that pipeline yet, but I know we do use RM to deploy VSO every 3 weeks. That's a good question, what tests are in there. I'll have to go back and ask some of the other PMs on. I like to see those tests.
Because I can find on the task, and for example, the Docker's task or something
Sure.
Yeah, I wonder how to test such like
Oh, well, interesting. Like, for example, I did a demo at Ignite New Zealand.
I'm really excited about this. Yeah.
There's so much stuff in here.
Yeah,
right?
So.
So I did a talk at Ignite New Zealand that you can see on Channel 9, mm-hmm. Where I deployed to a Docker container an ASP.NET app. Mm. But I still test it with Selenium. Oh, right? So just because it's running inside of a Docker container, if it's surfacing itself through a URL, I can access that through a web page, and then I just hit it with my Selenium test. So it doesn't. Where it's being hosted is not always necessary. It's how do I access the resource? Do I access it through a URL? Do I access it through, a web service? Do I access it through a FAT client? And that's where I determine how I'm going to test it, right? And because it's Docker, as long as it's a web app, I can grab it and start testing it.
Okay. So, and I'm wondering about the migration, database migration stuff.
Oh, good question. So it depends on the database type that you're using, but I'm a big fan of that too. I don't like demos that don't do database because it's like, come on, what app do you have that doesn't have a database in the back end, right? We all have it. So what we have is this new task that does a Azure SQL database deployment using what we call DACPack, right? You'll notice two of them. The reason why is I wrote this one myself, and then this one is one that comes right out of the box. It wasn't there when I wrote my own, but it's there now. Mm-hmm. And what's really nice is that if you add this to your pipeline here, you basically just give it a DACPack file, and then it'll go through and it'll figure out exactly how to deploy it all for you without you writing any SQL. So this is I'm a big fan of DACPack. Now this works if you're using SQL Server or SQL Azure, but if you're using something like Redgate or MySQL, you have to use something like Redgate. Mm-hmm. And Redgate is working on getting tasks in our task backlog, just like this one, to where you'll be able to use them just like you use ours. So database migrations can be managed through our release pipeline, just like all the rest of your changes as well.
Okay.
Great question.
Okay. Yeah, cool. I already have a lot of questions. Other thing is, these days a lot of people are crazy about the ChatOps.
Which one?
ChatOps, you know.
ChatOps.
Kubota or something.
Like Slack.
Slack and ChatOps.
Sure.
Yeah. What do you think about that?
It's extremely popular, and we do work with a lot of those different types of chat applications because, again, they're all... they all have webhooks and REST APIs that we can actually leverage so that you can actually wire them up and you get that information. But no, it becomes extremely powerful for people to use that. I mean, I know I'm on a few Slack channels as well. Mm-hmm. So I will use whatever technology that will make my team more productive, period.
Okay.
Right? That's the goal, right? The goal is to deliver value as quickly as we possibly can. And if that's through user voice or that's through a Slack channel or that's through a team room, whatever that is that allows me to produce that value and deliver it as quickly as possible, then I'm all ears and I'm willing to try it.
Okay. So then I'm going to ask you about the process.
Okay.
Yeah. If you and check in one code, and after that you maybe do some process, right? Mm-hmm. Then finally it is deployed into the production. Mm-hmm. Would you tell me the process? What kind of process and what kind of tool do you use?
Oh, great. So, yeah, that's. I guess just asked this the other day. They said, Donovan, we're really interested in DevOps, but we really need to see what does it look like. Well, I don't understand how we get there. And I said, the first thing that you should start with is a continuous integration system.
Yeah.
That's step number one. Mm-hmm. Every time a developer checks in code, you need to make sure that code is being built.
Of course.
Right?
This
thing. Exactly.
Yeah.
And what I'll show you here is we actually have that here. So here is our build system. Mm-hmm. So I think this one is don't save, right?
Okay.
I'm gonna discard.
Also,
Japanese is not very good.
Why must it?
So I want to make sure that I stay on here. So I want to go here, and I think I just want to say don't save. So this is our CI system. Mm-hmm. It will allow you to build anything.
Okay.
It'll allow you to build it on any platform you want. So our agent runs on Mac, it runs on Linux, and it runs on on PC or a Windows machine. And here you can build everything. You can build Android, you can build Ant, we have Grunt and Gradle and Gulp. We also have Maven in here as well. So any project that you can imagine, chances are we can already build it. Mm-hmm. And another thing that I like is that we have what we call our utility function. So anything that you can do from a batch file, a shell script, PowerShell, or a command line, you can do in our build system immediately right out of the box. And you don't even have to install an agent because we have agents in the cloud that you can actually use instead. So if I were to build a pipeline today and get that process going, I'd have my developers checking in their code inside of TFS or some other source control system. We also support GitHub directly. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to, you already have a repository in GitHub, you can come here and go directly to GitHub and get your code.
Okay.
So you don't have to worry about using our version control if you want to use someone else's. We're okay
cool.
with that.
Yeah,
so get the code checked in. Mm-hmm. Get a build running.
Okay, build running.
I want that build to make sure that it has unit test in there.
Yeah, unit testing.
Make sure we have a high quality code.
Okay.
And then once this is done, what we're going to do is we're going to come back over to our release system. And we can actually set up what we call a trigger. So when a developer checks in code, mm-hmm. the build kicks off. When the build is done, what's going to happen is mm-hmm. I'll show you what this looks like
please.
Here. If we go to triggers here, we can say, once this build is done, I then want you to start my release. Mm-hmm. And my release will then take the code and copy it to the environments which it needs to be copied to.
Yeah.
And we can even go further than that. We also have things like Azure Resource Manager mm-hmm. that will allow us to even spin up the environment in which you want us to deploy to, even if it doesn't exist. Infrastructure's code.
Yeah, cool.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and then we can deploy into that environment, run tests on that environment, get the approvals, and then move it through the pipeline. So the process starts with a check-in.
A check-in.
Goes through build,
uh-huh.
and then through release manager.
And
then it'll be living in your environment. And I want to say in your environment. It could be in Azure, it could be AWS, it could be on-prem. We don't care where your resources live. We can access them from release management.
Cool.
Yep.
Oh,
so that's how I see the process working. And it's worked very well for me in the past. So I've been very successful with that process.
Cool. Very cool.
Great.
Oh, then, what kind of telemetry do you have?
Good question. Yeah. So we collect all sorts of type of telemetry. So every time that you enter into VSO, we know how you got there. We know exactly how many builds get run. We know what task that you're using in your build so that we can determine if we're doing a lot of iOS builds or are we doing a lot of native builds. So we collect a lot of telemetry on that. If you're starting to create a new project and you abandon it for some reason, we can see where in the process you abandon it, and we can go back in and we can rework that to see if we can get a higher success rate of people committing through there. So we use products like Application Insights to be able to track that, which is a part I think should be a part of your pipeline as well. So getting the code into a development environment isn't the end of the story. Because now I want to know how is it running.
Exactly.
How is it running?
Is it
performing really well? Exactly.
Yeah.
Are the users using that new feature that we added? If they're not using that new feature, is it because they're getting lost in our website? Is it that we don't have enough marketing for that page? Mm-hmm. And what we can do is we can actually go and put out a campaign for marketing and then go back and monitor that telemetry and say, do we see an uptake in that page? Do we see more people finding that page based on these inputs that we've just decided to use? And what I like to do with the information that we're gathering is take it back to our product backlog and determine, based on the way that users are actually using our app, do we have our backlog in the right order? Is this what they really look like they want to see next? And I can determine that from actual production data, which is what we use telemetry for as well.
Okay. Oh, cool.
Yeah, telemetry is really, really important. It's like the final step, right? I think it's the final step because we start with the idea.
Yeah.
We take it all the way into production.
Production.
We monitor it.
Yeah.
And then we bring that data back in and start all over again.
Yeah, cycle is very important. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, then finally, I ask all of my question.
Okay.
So, as a representative of Japanese community of the TFS, and my friend, his name is Change World.
Okay.
Very, big name, right? he's a big fan of the VSO.
Great.
VSO, And he asked about the question, and he want to do the build chain, and he want to kick from one build to another build.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, build chaining is what we call that, and we're working on it. Right?
We're working on that.
It's not there today, but we've heard that multiple times, and we want to chain one build into another, and we are looking into making that happen for
you. Oh, cool. Yeah, he created by himself, calling the REST API or something.
Oh, yeah, you can definitely do that.
Yeah, will you support the REST API calling on the build?
The REST API already exists for build, but I think what we want to do with chaining, it might be a little bit more than just one, because you might have one build want to spawn off two other builds, right? You can and then have them rejoin. Once those two builds are done, now I want this third build to run.
Yeah.
But not just when that first one's done, but when all of these are done, then I want this to happen. So I think we're taking it a little bit further than just, I want this build to kick off that build, right? Because we might want to spread it out and then join it back together again as well.
Okay.
Right, so a little bit, but that is something that we've heard. Mm-hmm. We know some of the other CI systems can do things like that, and we're working on closing that gap.
Cool. Yeah, and another thing is, we can see a lot of the cool future, right? And for example, release management and Yeah, other thing is a very impressive tasks.
Oh yeah, right? the task list is my favorite part. I love bringing that up in front of customers because they're so shocked to see there's so many other things in there besides what comes from Microsoft, right?
Yeah.
So there's Ant and Gradle and Grunt and Maven, and I've done Java builds with Maven that go directly to SonarQube for technical debt and things like that. So I'm actually very proud of our build system. I think it's come a long way from where it was in the beginning.
When will it be released?
The build system is already live.
Oh, right? Really?
Yeah. So the build system is already live. Everyone who goes to VSO today, if they go to build, they will see this new build experience.
Oh, really?
What they're not going to see is this release. The release right now is in private preview. We're targeting the Connect event to be able to do public preview.
Okay.
Right. So, but you can get to the build today. And the build and the release are so similar. I tell everybody, don't wait for us to give you release. Learn build as best you can because all the knowledge you learn in build is immediately applicable in release.
You mean I can use it because I'm a Microsoft.
Anyone can use it.
Anyone?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. VSO, anyone who wants to go to VSO right now can create a VSO account for free.
Okay, and of course.
Yeah, and up to four of their friends.
Can they use a new build system?
Absolutely, they can.
Oh, really?
Yes, there's only one
release manager.
Release manager, not yet.
Okay.
Yeah. Release manager, not yet. That's in private preview. Only certain people have access to it, but build, everyone has access to.
Okay.
Yeah, and so you can start using this incredible build system today.
Oh, really? And I thought the VSO task is on GitHub, right?
Oh, they are completely open source. So you can go see how we created them. And recently on DonovanBrown.com, I blogged how to upload your own.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so.
Oh, can I make, for example, the logo or something?
You actually do, right? So I can, let's see, Donovan Brown.
Oh, cool.
Let's see if we can get this to come up here for you real quick.
Oh.
So right here, how do I upload a custom task for build?
Perfect.
Exactly.
Exactly. This is not what I
wanted. You'll be able to add your own. You'll be able to add your own image. You'll be able to add your own PowerShell. Uh-huh. Your own Node.js script if you want to run it on our multi-platform agent, and you just upload it to us. And then in that list shows up your task. And you can use your task in your builds as well.
Oh, so I can contribute to
absolutely
that.
To your own, not only to your community, but also to your own team as well. Because on GitHub, I have a repo where I started putting my own. So I have a couple of tasks that I wrote that anyone can go and download and get if they want to.
Oh, if I want to hide the task, can I do it? For example, the local repository or something.
Absolutely. Yeah, these tasks are only up here because I wanted to share them. If it was proprietary, you don't want anyone else to have it but your organization, you store that in your repo privately, and then you just upload the task to your TFS, not everyone else's.
Oh, really? Cool.
So absolutely, you can control it as well. I just don't mind sharing them, so I just put them out there for everyone to use.
Okay. And the other question is a VSO agent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd like to automate a VSO agent on the Linux.
Okay.
But right now, and it don't seem to have a service VSO agent.
We do have an agent for Linux. Are you saying you just want to make it easier to install it?
Yeah, I can do it. But I want the agent version. I'd like to automate.
I got you. Installing that. So there are people who are working on ways that we've already automated the deployment of our one on Windows. For example, I know there's an ARM template that'll stand up a build agent. I think there's a DSC script some guys are working on. What we'll have to do on the Linux side is we could come up with a Docker image.
Oh, Docker image.
Exactly.
Okay.
We could just spin up an agent in the cloud for you instantly as a Docker image or in a container. So we're working on things like that because we know that it's not as easy as it could be to install that agent. And we're working on ways to making it even easier.
That's
a good idea. But I know there's a lot of people out there because I know there's already an ARM template. Chris Patterson, the PM for Build, and I have already toyed with the idea of a DSC script that could stand one up. And I know that there's rumors of one in a Docker container if it's not already there.
Okay. Very cool.
Great.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Were there any other questions there?
Yeah, right now. Yeah. No, I don't have it. Oh. Would you give us a message for the Japanese fan of you?
I was flattered that you wanted to interview me. I really do appreciate you coming down here and seeing me. If you want to follow me, I am on Twitter at Donovan Brown, and I take questions off of Twitter quite often.
Oh.
So again, my demo at Ignite was really popular. So what I'm doing right now on DonovanBrown.com is I'm literally blogging every week on how I built that demo. Right? It went to Docker. It used ASP.NET.
Docker,
it used Selenium. It used XUnit. It used Azure websites, mm-hmm. SQL Azure. I threw in all the technology I could into one demo.
One demo.
Yeah, exactly.
And what I'm doing now is to your demo.
Exactly. So I'm explaining to people how to. Yeah, actually, everyone can use it.
Oh, really?
So what I did is, if you'll notice
please show
here,
me. I need to take a memo as an evangelist.
So right here, it's Ignite Demo Step 1, Step 2, Step 3. I'm documenting exactly how I built it.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So everyone will be able to do it. So, no, I hope that was helpful, and you got all the questions answered that you want. Is it good?
Yeah, cool. Right, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good morning, everyone. Let's try that again. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Perfect.